Welcome to Learning English, the voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, John Russell, Dan Friedel, and Jill Robbins. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
After making a visit to Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told reporters Russia is failing in its war aims in the country. Blinken's comments came after he traveled to Kyiv with Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. The two men spoke to reporters Monday in Poland after crossing the border from Ukraine. In Kyiv, they met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and other officials for about 3 hours. The trip by Blinken and Austin was the highest-level visit to Kyiv since Russia invaded Ukraine in late February. The two officials announced the U.S. had promised Zelensky more than $300 million in additional foreign military aid and about $165 million in ammunition. The latest aid brings the total amount of American military assistance to Ukraine to $3.7 billion since the invasion began. About the meeting with Zelensky, Austin told reporters, "He has the mindset that they want to win, and we have the mindset that we want to help them win." Austin said the nature of the fighting in Ukraine had changed. Russia has moved from forest areas in the north to the country's eastern industrial heartland called the Donbas. Because of this change, Ukraine's military needs are now centered on tanks, artillery, and other military equipment, he added. "The first step in winning is believing that you can win," Austin said. "We believe that they can win if they have the right equipment, the right support, and we're going to do everything we can to ensure that gets to them." Blinken said the meeting presented the chance for him to personally demonstrate our strong ongoing support for the Ukrainian government and the Ukrainian people. He added that U.S. policies concerning the war in Ukraine have produced real results so far. These include providing military assistance to Ukraine and cooperating with U.S. allies to put strong economic and political pressures on Russia. "When it comes to Russia's war aims, Russia is failing. Ukraine is succeeding," Blinken said. He added that Russia's main aim has been to totally subjugate Ukraine, to take away its sovereignty, to take away its independence. But that effort, Blinken said, has failed. I'm Brian Lynn.
Scientists who study stars have detected a previously unknown kind of event called a micronova. The event involves thermonuclear explosions that take place on a star called a white dwarf. The explosions happen because the white dwarf's gravity has pulled material from a companion star. Astronomers said recently that a micronova is by far the least powerful kind of star explosion now known. Micronovae are observed from Earth as bursts of light lasting about 10 hours. They have been documented on three white dwarf stars, one 1,680 light-years away from Earth, one 3,720 light-years away, and one 4,900 light-years away. A light-year is the distance light travels in 1 year. Simon Scaringi of Durham University in England was the lead writer of the study that appeared in the publication Nature. "The discovery was an unexpected surprise," Scaringi said. He added that finding these events requires looking at the right place at the right time. White dwarf stars are among the densest objects in the universe. They result from the collapse of a dying star's core. They have the mass of our sun, but are about the size of Earth. Most stars, including the sun, will end their existence in this way. Some white dwarfs are part of what is called a binary system, meaning that they are in an orbit with another star. Micronovae happen in special binary systems with a white dwarf star possessing a strong magnetic field and a low-mass normal star. The white dwarf's gravity can pull hydrogen gas from the companion star's surface. The hydrogen then flows toward the white dwarf's magnetic poles. At the white dwarf's poles, the pressure and temperature rise. This causes thermonuclear fusion that converts hydrogen into helium and releases energy. This fusion is explosive, and the micronova occurs. A thermonuclear bomb goes off, said astronomer Paul Groot, who helped write the study. The explosion is not widespread and does not destroy the white dwarf. In fact, micronova events can repeat many times. Each micronova event burns through material equal to one large asteroid, or just over 1/1,000,000th of Earth's mass. A micronova is similar to a nova, a thermonuclear explosion involving a whole star. With novae, the white dwarf does not have a strong magnetic field, meaning that hydrogen stolen from the companion star is spread rather than staying at the poles. Novae can last for weeks or months, burning through about 1,000,000 times more mass than micronovae, Scaringi said. The researchers discovered the micronovae when examining data from NASA's TESS space telescope. They used the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope in Chile to confirm the explosions involving white dwarfs. I'm John Russell.
In Thornton Wilder's 1938 play, Our Town, people gather to enjoy the beloved scent of heliotrope flowers in the moonlight. The scene is memorable. At the time, the wonderfully light but deeply sweet smell of heliotrope could be found in most American gardens.
Today, however, these flowering plants are rarely seen or smelled in the United States. Americans stopped growing heliotrope and other Victorian period flowers. Hybrids and small, dense bedding plants are the substitutes in many gardens. Gardening expert Jessica Damiano writes for the Associated Press. She regrets the disappearance of these once common plants. In a recent report, she writes that gardeners should consider planting Victorian garden flowers.
4 o'clocks. Damiano suggests 4 o'clocks as one candidate. These white, red, pink, purple, or yellow flowers are shaped like trumpet musical instruments. Their petals open daily in late afternoon. They appear from spring until frost, the time when ice starts to form overnight. The plant for these flowers does not require much care or water. It renews easily and gives out a sweet, lemony scent that brings bees, butterflies, and hummingbirds to the plant to feed.
Cosmos. The daisy-like cosmos grows from early summer through frost. Some even grow year-round in warmer climates. All of them self-seed, ensuring the flowers grow for years to come. The plant should grow in full sun, except for in southernmost areas, where they can use some shade. The flowers are colored in yellow, pink, orange, red, purple, white, and maroon.
Sweet peas. Pink, purple, red, white, or mixed color, the vine plant, sweet peas, blooms yearly during spring and early summer. The flower carries the scent of grapes in full sun in northern zones. In the south, it requires some afternoon shade.
Kiss Me Over the Garden Gate. Kiss Me Over the Garden Gate was a favorite flower of America's President Thomas Jefferson. This easy care plant grows to nearly 2 meters tall, making it perfect for the back of the garden. Its pink flowers hang from the plant in big bunches. In areas with cold winters, plant the seeds directly into the garden in autumn. In warm climates, keep them very cold for a week before planting outside.
Hollyhocks. Pink, purple, peach, red, white, yellow, or near black, hollyhock flowers will cover the plant's 2.5 meter tall stalks from top to bottom. The large-leaved plants are biennial, which means they live for 2 years and bloom only in their second year. But they do self-seed, so there will always be more flowers to come. Plant them in full sun in the north and part shade in hot climates, and provide a fence or similar structure for support.
English primroses. There are nearly 500 kinds of primroses in many colors. But most gardens likely include the yellow-flowered ones. The short-lived flowers that return yearly prefer partly wet, partly shady conditions. Grow them in winter in the south and the spring elsewhere.
Soapwort. Soapwort is a flowering herb. The ground cover blooms in late spring and summer. It returns every year and can grow as high as 1 meter. Plant seeds directly into the garden in a sunny spot in spring. Remove dead flowers to avoid overgrowth. You can make a liquid cleanser from soapwort. Cut up about 130 grams of the plant's leaves and stems. Place them in around 500 milliliters of boiling water. Bring down the heat to a low setting and cook for 15 minutes. Then, cool the liquid and use.
Heliotropes. With the wonderful strong scent of cherry, almond, and vanilla, Heliotropes are grown yearly and available in several colors. The dark purple color flower was noted in the famous Thornton Wilder play. Plant them in full sun everywhere except the deep south. There, the flowers will do best if provided some afternoon shade. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We continue the story of the presidency of Ronald Reagan. Soon after his presidency began, there was an attempt on his life. A gunman shot President Reagan in March 1981. Doctors removed the bullet. He rested, regained his strength, and returned to the White House in 12 days. The new president wanted to reduce the size of the federal government. He and other conservative Republicans wanted less government interference in the lives of Americans. President Reagan won congressional approval for his plan to reduce income tax rates. Many Americans welcomed the plan. Others were concerned about its effects on the national debt. They saw taxes go down while defense spending went up. To save money, the Reagan administration decided to cut spending for some social programs. This pleased conservatives. Liberals, however, said it limited poor people's chances for good housing, health care, and education. President Reagan also had to make decisions about using military force in other countries. In 1983, he sent Marines to Lebanon. They joined other peacekeeping troops to help stop fighting among competing groups. On October 23rd, a truck carrying explosives bombed Marine housing at Beirut International Airport.
There was nothing in its appearance to suggest it was any different than the trucks or cars that were normally seen on and around the airport. But this one was different. At the wheel was a young man on a suicide mission. The truck carried some 2,000 pounds of explosives. But there was no way our Marine guards could know this. Their first warning that something was wrong came when the truck crashed through a series of barriers. The guards opened fire, but it was too late. The truck smashed through the doors of the headquarters building in which our Marines were sleeping and instantly exploded.
241 Americans were killed. Two days later, Marines led an invasion of the Caribbean island nation of Grenada. Communist forces were rebelling against the government there. Cuban soldiers were guarding the streets. President Reagan said he feared for the safety of American students at a medical school in Grenada. He sent the Marines to get them out safely. The Marines quickly defeated the communist forces. Many Americans were pleased. Others were angry. They said Grenada was invaded only to make people forget about what happened in Lebanon. The next year, 1984, was a presidential election year. It looked like no one could stop President Reagan. His warm way with people had made him hugely popular. He gained support with the military victory in Grenada. And by the time the campaign started, inflation was under control. The Republican Party renominated Ronald Reagan for president and George Bush for vice president. There were several candidates for the Democratic Party's nomination. One was the first African American to seek the presidency, Jesse Jackson. He was a Protestant clergyman and a longtime human rights activist. The candidate who finally won the nomination was Walter Mondale. He had been a senator and had served as vice president under President Jimmy Carter. The vice presidential candidate was Congresswoman Geraldine Ferraro. It was the first time a major party in the United States had nominated a woman for national office.
Tonight, the daughter of working Americans tells all Americans that the future is within our reach if we're willing to reach for it.
One issue in the election campaign was taxes. Political candidates often try to avoid talking about taxes with voters. But former Vice President Mondale did talk about the issue. He said taxes would have to be raised to pay for new government programs.
The American people will have to pay Mr. Reagan's bills. The budget will be squeezed. Taxes will go up, and anyone who says they won't is not telling the truth to the American people.
This was a serious political mistake. President Reagan gained even more support as a result. The two candidates agreed to debate on television. During one debate, President Reagan looked old and tired. He did not seem sure of his answers. Yet his popularity was not damaged. On Election Day, he won 59% of the popular vote. On Inauguration Day, the weather was bitterly cold in Washington. All inaugural activities, including the swearing-in ceremony, were held inside. President Reagan's first term began with an attempt on his life. 6 months after his second term began, he faced another threat. Doctors discovered and removed a large growth from his colon. The growth was cancerous. The president was 74 years old. Yet once again, he quickly regained his strength and returned to work. For years, the United States had accused Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi of supporting international terrorist groups. It said he provided them with weapons and a safe place for their headquarters. In January 1986, the United States announced economic actions against Libya. Then it began military training exercises near the Libyan coast. Libya said the Americans were violating its territory and fired missiles at them. The Americans fired back, sinking two ships. On April 5th, a bomb destroyed a dance club in West Berlin. An American soldier and another person were killed. The United States said Libya was responsible. President Reagan ordered a bombing raid on the Libyan cities of Tripoli and Benghazi. Muammar Gaddafi escaped unharmed, but said his adopted daughter was killed. Some Americans said the raid was cruel. Others praised it. President Reagan said the United States did what it had to do. The president also wanted to intervene in Nicaragua. About 15,000 rebel troops, called Contras, were fighting the country's communist government. President Reagan asked for military aid for the Contras. Congress rejected the request. In fact, it banned all aid to the Contras. At that same time, Muslim extremists in Lebanon seized several Americans. The Reagan administration looked for ways to gain the release of the hostages. It decided to sell missiles and missile parts to Iran in exchange for Iran's help. After the sale, Iran told the extremists in Lebanon to release a few American hostages. Not long after, serious charges became public. Reports said that money from the sale of arms to Iran was used to aid the Contra rebels in Nicaragua. Several members of the Reagan administration resigned. It appeared that some had violated the law. President Reagan said he regretted what had happened, but he said he had not known about it. Investigations and court trials of those involved continued into the 1990s. Several people were found guilty of illegal activities or of lying to Congress. No one went to jail. Most Americans did not blame the president for the actions of others in his administration. They still supported him and his policies. They especially supported his efforts to deal with the Soviet Union. At the beginning of his first term, President Reagan called the Soviet Union an evil empire. To protect the United States against the Soviets, he increased military spending to the highest level in American history. Then, in 1985, Mikhail Gorbachev became the leader of the Soviet Union. Reagan and Gorbachev held four summit meetings in Geneva, Switzerland, Reykjavik, Iceland, Washington, and Moscow. Each leader agreed to destroy hundreds of nuclear missiles. President Reagan also urged General Secretary Gorbachev to become more democratic. He spoke about the Berlin Wall, which communists had built to prevent citizens from crossing between East and West Berlin.
General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
About this time, a new sense of glasnost, or openness, was beginning in the Soviet Union. It was also a time of perestroika, or restructuring. The American economy grew rapidly during Ronald Reagan's presidency, but at the end of his second term, many Americans were concerned by what he left behind. Increased military spending, together with tax cuts, had made the national debt huge. The United States owed thousands of millions of dollars. The debt would be a political issue for presidents to come. Yet Ronald Reagan will be remembered as one of America's most popular presidents. Above his burial place at the Reagan Library in California are these words, which speak to Reagan's belief in humanity. I know in my heart that man is good, that what is right will always eventually triumph, and there is purpose and worth to each and every life.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.